Show on the Big 550 KTRS. That's me. Thank you very much for listening. Tim's in the traffic center. Max is here in the studio with me. And this is the hour each week where Max and I turn our attention to the new movies that are opening up in the St. Louis area and other showbiz news to get to. And in fact, today there's really only one movie opening in the St. Louis area that we have to pay much attention to. It's called Hostiles, and it stars Christian Bale, who we haven't seen for a couple of years on screen, but now he's back in what I don't think you could actually call an old-fashioned Western, but I'll let you take the lead on this, Max.
Yeah, Hostiles is not an old-fashioned Western, which is one of the reasons why I enjoyed it. I've never been a fan of Westerns. I understand that just like we are in an era right now where we have superhero movies every couple of months, I know that when my father was growing up, they had Westerns all the time on the big screen, and he loved them.
And on the small screen.
Absolutely. He would watch Westerns when he came home from school. He would go on the weekends and watch Westerns on the big screen, and this is very much what kids are growing up right now with superheroes. But I missed that era. I didn't have the Lone Ranger, and I didn't have Gary Cooper, and so I didn't really care too much about Westerns.
Have you ever seen things like Gunsmoke or The Virginian or Maverick or Bonanza, any of those?
And it's never grabbed me. I don't like that sort of old Hollywood rendition of the Old West because I think it's completely fake. And it's always seemed more sort of fantastical and science fiction-y to me than even fantasy films, because I'm thinking not everybody wore black hats and white hats back in the Old West.
Really?
And so now there are, of course, exceptions to that rule there. Tombstone, I think, is a great movie. Unforgiven is a great movie. And there's been elements of Westerns in other movies that I've enjoyed too. But what I enjoyed about Hostiles is that it's none of that. It is a very grim, depressing look at a different era in the Old West, right before the turn of the century, the late 1800s, about 1890 or so, where we were sort of moving into a different era, and all the horrible things that people did to one another. Now, you mentioned this is a Christian Bale film. I don't think we've seen him on the big screen since The Big Short, and he was great in that movie. Yeah. I like Christian Bale when he stretches like that, when he does something funny like The Big Short, or when he does something over the top like American Psycho, or when he does something like the schlubby character in American Hustle. I'm not too much of a fan of the gruff Christian Bale, the Batman Christian Bale, sort of the rut that DiCaprio gets locked in sometimes of being the big macho man.
So you didn't like him in The Dark Knight?
No, I don't like his Batman or Bruce Wayne at all, actually. But
what about in The Fighter?
I liked him in The Fighter very much. Again, that's what I like is when he stretches himself a bit, like in something like The Machinist, or even his early work in the musical Newsies or Empire of the Sun for Steven Spielberg. I mean, I think he's a very, very good actor.
I do have to correct you on one thing. The last time he was on screen was about a year and a half ago in a movie called The Promise. That was the one about the
Armenian genocide.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which you and I didn't like. We kind of liked the concept, but not the execution.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was trying to be sort of an old school epic. Everything that Hostiles is not trying to be. This is a movie that is based on a manuscript, an unfilmed until now manuscript by Donald Stewart, who was a writer who co-wrote a lot of the Tom Clancy movies like Hunt for Red October, Clear and Present Danger. And Scott Cooper, who was a one-time actor, now he's a director, found this manuscript and thought this will make a really great picture. He has spent the last couple of years making movies about conflicted men. I think that's probably the best way to put it.
Okay.
He did a movie with Christian Bale called Out of the Furnace. That was a phenomenal film. He did a movie with Jeff Bridges that won Jeff Bridges the Best Acting Oscar.
Yes, and
I blame Crazy Heart. Right.
I blame Scott Cooper for the beginning of the Jeff Bridges mumbling period.
He won an Oscar for it and he never looked back.
Right.
And the most recent thing he did was Black Mass about Whitey Bulger.
Horrible.
See, I didn't think it was horrible because I enjoyed seeing Johnny Depp actually act again instead of just being a crazy
movie
character.
Was horrible. There are always good performances inside bad movies, and that was one of them.
Well, so
and for that, you have to blame the director.
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is a better picture than that one. It's funny, you and I never talk about the movies before we go on the air, so we can have an honest reaction with one another. But you did say one thing to me today. You said, I'm going to let you take the lead on this because I'm not sure how I feel about the film.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy that you said that to me today because This is exactly the kind of film that hit me more the next day. I wasn't sure while I was watching it even what I thought about it, because it's a pretty challenging movie. And when it was over and I went to sleep, I thought, okay, I kind of know where my review is going to be. Then the whole next day, I kept thinking about it. I kept going over different scenes. I kept going over different motivations. And the last couple of days that I've sat with the movie, it's really grown in my estimation. And I'm actually giving it a more positive review now than if we would have talked right after seeing it.
Okay. One thing I do have to warn listeners who might consider going to see this movie about is going to see this movie
is the opening
is that it's quite violent. Not just the opening, but the whole movie. But the very first scene in the movie has a group of Indians, Comanches in particular, mm-hmm. who kill the husband and children of the character named Rosalie, who is played by Rosamund Pike in a yes. pretty good performance in yeah. this. And they burn down the house, et cetera, et cetera. And you get to see the horrible sight of children running away from men on horseback in war paint, shooting children from behind.
You know, especially in 2018, I think that audiences who go see something like Hostiles are going to have a lot of sympathy for the Native Americans. And they're going to, you know, unlike maybe audiences who watched Westerns, you know, generations ago. And I think it's an amazing thing to start the movie with that scene, because when you meet Christian Bale's general, who does not like
he's a captain
who does not like the savages, as he calls them, you can kind of see where he's coming from as far as his hatred of what he's seen on the battlefield.
At the same time, you have to acknowledge that he himself is kind of savage.
They, of course, are the interlopers here. We took their country from them, which is something that President Harrison is dealing with now that he's getting some blowback from American citizens about how we're not treating them very well at almost the turn of the century. So he orders this older chief, Chief Yellowhawk, I think was his name,
yes.
played wonderfully by Wes Studi, who
yep.
people might remember from the 90s. He was in Dances with Wolves and Last of the Mohicans. He played Geronimo in that self-titled movie.
He is the Indian in every movie that Graham Greene doesn't do, and even in some that Graham Greene does
exactly
do.
Exactly what I told my wife when she was like, now where do I know him from? I'm like, if it wasn't Graham Greene, it was Wes Studi.
Right, those are the two official Indian actors of Hollywood.
But yes, and so he is ordered, Christian Bale is, in order to get his pension, he has to escort this dying Indian chief back to this reservation.
To his tribal burial grounds.
Yeah, basically for political optics, to try to say, look, we're not treating them horribly, which of course we were at the time. Something that Hostiles does very well is it doesn't put a white hat on some people and a black hat on others. It's saying there's blood on everyone's hands in this movie.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Rosamund Pike. She spends most of this movie just recovering from and dealing with the fact that her entire family has been murdered.
And her entire life.
And I think it's an extraordinary, heartbreaking role for her.
I agree. Now, what's interesting about this is we established very early on that Christian Bale has slaughtered lots of Indians. And now he has to accompany an Indian named Yellowhawk, the chief that you talked about. He has to accompany him from New Mexico to Montana. A drive I would not make now.
Absolutely.
In the 21st century. And they had to do it on horseback.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Chief Yellowhawk, he and his people have murdered several of Captain Joseph Blocker, the Christian Bale character's closest friends. And so we're talking about people who've murdered a lot of people, trying to take care of other people who have murdered a lot of people. And this woman is caught in the middle. Look, all I did was move out here with my husband,
right.
had a few children, and we're trying to make our way on the new frontier.
Yep. We talked about 12 Strong last week and about how when they were in Afghanistan, when American forces were there, they had to watch out for other anti-Taliban factions,
yes.
but who would not be friendly to them either as
yeah.
Americans. Same thing here, where Christian Bale is trying to escort Wes Studi, and they have Rosamund Pike now, who has joined their tribe, basically. And yet you have Comanches, who are basically murderous towards everyone. And
they will kill the Cherokee,
yes.
as well as they will kill the white man.
Exactly.
So that's a very interesting thing. And then, by the way, we also, and I'm not going to give anything away about the plot here, but I will tell you that Ben Foster shows up about two-thirds of the way through this movie as a guy who has to go to be hanged. He's not even
right.
It'll be a trial, but he's going to end up being hanged.
Yep.
Why? For killing Indians indiscriminately. And at one point he says to Christian Bale's character, who's an old friend, you realize that I'm being sentenced to death for the same thing you've done more times than I have? But when policies change.
Exactly. which you get a bit of those sort of political motivations for why these characters are, why their hands are forced. Ben Foster is sort of a modern day Dennis Hopper. Whenever he shows up, I'm like, the whole picture is going to go sideways because he's just such a crazy presence.
Yes. Now, a couple of things I have to mention that I did not like about this movie. One, and I place this right at the feet of Scott Cooper, the writer slash director of this movie. We know that the Christian Bale character, Captain Joseph Blocker, is a really good guy, because only really good guys would have a copy of Shakespeare's Julius Caesar that they read out on the plains.
Sure.
By the light of the fire.
Right. That was silly.
Come on.
Yeah.
What are you trying to tell me about this guy?
Right.
And then there's the relationship that he has with Rosamund Pike, which, without giving anything away, is so obvious I saw it before the movie started.
Now, that being said, and I'm absolutely not going to give away the ending, but I was talking to Tom O'Keefe today about this movie, and we were both discussing the ending. Maybe if we do like a spoiler podcast, we can talk about it. I thought it was a really wonderful ending, and it could have been cheesy, and I'm wondering if you thought it was cheesy. I did not think the ending was cheesy.
I don't think it's cheesy, but I don't like it.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I liked it, and I can't get too much into the nuts and bolts.
I know, we can't
why.
Give anything away about that. I will say that this is another one of those movies that has a wonderful ensemble cast, including two actors who by law now must appear in every movie. Bill Camp, who frankly I had never heard of before the HBO series The Night Of with Riz Ahmed and John Turturro that ran a few years ago as a limited series, and he played a cop and was so damned good in that Hollywood noticed. He'd been a character actor for a long time, but he wasn't really getting noticed that much until that HBO series, and now he's in every movie. And the other guy who's in every movie is Jesse Plemons, who is terrific.
Black Mirror, and he's everywhere now.
He's terrific in this movie as well. And the cast also includes Timothée Chalamet and Rory Cochran, and as I mentioned, Ben Foster. It's a pretty good ensemble cast.
It really is, and I think it's a movie worth watching, but I will warn the audience about something else. You warn them about the violence of the film, and it really is a very violent film with some gruesome images. But I'll also warn people that this is a grim, at times depressing movie.
And also at times a little bit slow. It has to be slow because of those periods that have to come in there between the violent segments. Mm-hmm. But if you're expecting it to be ba-da-bum, 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 like a horse galloping, you can't make a movie like that.
Yeah, I watched the screener of this at home, and my wife made it about halfway through the picture. And then the next morning, she said to me, did the film ever get any less grim? And I said, no, it didn't.
Right.
So you have to know that going in, too. This is not a feel-good Western.
Yeah. And as you said, there's no defined good guy and defined bad guy. When you don't have that, you don't have a defined climactic moment where you go, whoa, I'm glad we made it through that. You know, it's not like the Liam Neeson movie we talked about a week or two ago, where at the end you go, whoa, okay, our hero won the day. In this one, you come to the end and you go, okay, that was an interesting adventure.
Yeah, you just try to have, I think these characters just try to have a better tomorrow than what they had today.
All right. The movie is called Hostiles. What do you give it on a scale of 0 to 10, Max?
I think on my initial viewing, I would have given this a 6 or a 7. But after marinating with it, you know, a couple days and going over it again, I'm going to give this a solid 8.
Okay, I'm going to give it a 7. That's kind of a wavering number for me, but I think that's where it comes down. And we've got lots more showbiz stuff to get to when we come back from this break, as the Paul Harris Friday Show continues on the Big 550 KTRS. This is the Showbiz Show on the Big 550 KTRS. Max, on Tuesday, they announced the nominees for the Oscars, and I think we were pretty much spot on in our predictions of what would end up in there. I will say, before we even talk about any of the possible winners, how disappointed I am that the Academy nominated 9 movies for Best Picture, and none of those are named The Big Sick, which I had as number 1 on my best movies of 2017 list. It was in your top 10 as well, wasn't it?
I love The Big Sick. I'm really happy it got original screenplay. That was sort of the lock for that category. However, if you look at that specific category, it's maybe the toughest one this year, because there were so many great original screenplays, from Lady Bird to Get Out to Three Billboards and Shape of Water. I mean, that's a tough, tough category. So it was nominated. I'm not even sure Big Sick wins that one.
I really hope it does, but I have a feeling it's not going to.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I think that Three Billboards is going to win for Best Picture and is going to win a couple of other awards, including Best Original Screenplay. Mm-hmm. Don't you think Frances McDormand is a lock to win Best Actress?
I think she's a lock, and perhaps that's why Casey Affleck didn't want to be on stage to give her the award, because he might have thought she would have decked him.
Now, interesting, for those of you who don't know this, this just happened a couple of hours before we went on the air today, and that is that Casey Affleck, who won last year for Best Actor for Manchester by the Sea, interestingly, he was given the award by the presenter Brie Larson, who did not applaud for him because she kind of knew about his past of sexual assault and or harassment against, yep, about women in his life.
And she gave it to him because she won Best Actress for playing an abused woman in the film Room the year before.
Right. And the reason she was there in the first place is because that's the way the Academy has done it for a quarter of a century or maybe more. Sure. If you win in your category, your acting category this year, the next year you come back and give the award in the other gender's same category. So since he won for Best Actor last year, he would come back this year and give Best Actress. But in the era of Me Too and Time's Up, a guy who has a history like his can't win that award. Which brings me to the guy who is going to win the award for Best Actor, and that's Gary Oldman, who has his own problems with accusations years ago by a woman he was, I don't know, married to or living with, who says that he hit her and beat her up. In fact, she filed charges against him. Now, will that work against him in this vote?
I don't think so. And not to gloss over his past violent past, but people have known about this with him for a long time. He also publicly gave up drinking. He's gone to rehab. He's been sober for many, many years. He's talked about his own domestic violent history, and he's talked about his heavy drinking. He was with Uma Thurman for a long time. She left him because of his drinking. I think when you can present yourself as a reformed man, I think that's much, much different than a Casey Affleck.
Okay, but what happens if he wins this year and next year has to present Best Actress?
Again, I don't think it's an issue.
Okay. What about the Best Actor in a supporting role race, which really comes down to Sam Rockwell or Christopher Plummer? The other three people who are nominated in there, I don't think have a chance of it. Sam Rockwell has won all the awards thus far. Mm-hmm. But isn't there some sort of Hollywood vote for Christopher Plummer here?
It's going to be Plummer. He already is the oldest Oscar winner of all time. He was 82 when he won for Beginners.
Which is a good movie.
Which is a good movie, and he was fantastic in it. He's 88 now, which makes him the oldest person nominated, and he absolutely will win this. I know that Rockwell has won the smaller awards. That's not always a prognosticator for what's going to happen.
May not be the oldest Oscar winner ever if James Ivory can win for Best Adapted Screenplay for Call Me By Your Name. He is 89 years old.
Which I could see happening. People love Merchant Ivory films. People love that movie as well. And I don't think it's going to win in other bigger categories. As a comic book geek, as you know, Paul, I have to point out that Logan is the very first ever nominated film in adapted screenplay based on a comic book. It's the first time a comic book series has ever been nominated for an Oscar in that category.
Wow. Well, I was talking about the oldest. How about the youngest? Timothy Chalamet, 22 years old, youngest Best Actor nominee since Mickey Rooney for Babes in Arms.
Wow.
78 years ago, Mickey Rooney was 19.
And what a career this guy's already had. He was in Call Me By Your Name. He was in Lady Bird, and he's in Hostiles right now.
Yeah, the other one that I was very disappointed by was Holly Hunter being left out of the Best Supporting Actress category. This is all because I'm such a huge fan of The Big Sick. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the movie, I said, this may not get in there for Best Picture, but certainly for Best Original Screenplay, and let's hope for Holly Hunter for Best Supporting Actress. And she's not in there. Although, even if she were in there, she probably would lose to Allison Janney, right? Is that another lock?
No, I don't think it's a lock at all. I think that Laurie Metcalf is beloved by her fellow nominees and by the Academy. She does not. She's not is such a prolific film actress as Allison Janney. I kind of think that they might give this to Laurie Metcalf.
Okay, one other thing that we'll have to notice this year is whether PricewaterhouseCoopers screws up again. Remember, they were the ones who were responsible for the Best Picture envelope, mm-hmm, not getting to Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, because the guy backstage was tweeting and taking pictures of the celebrities backstage.
He took a photo of Emma Stone right after she won Best Actress. He took a photo of her and tweeted it out, and he was getting all kerfuffled, and I've seen that photo, and it's like, hey, man, calm down. You know, maybe take a photo of the redhead later. Maybe do your job first.
Yep. Well, those two people who were there, that guy and the woman who was assigned that night, they still work for PricewaterhouseCooper, but they will not even be allowed to go to the ceremony this year.
Wow.
There will be two other partners who are doing that. Plus, they'll have a third partner who will be there with yet another set of envelopes who will also be going through and making sure that they choose the correct person. And they're also going to go to all show rehearsals and practice what to do if something goes wrong.
Wow.
Which they didn't have last year. Remember the confusion on stage because they did not, it never happened before.
Right.
And so they weren't prepared for it. So they have all sorts of new procedures. And the final change for the PricewaterhouseCooper employees this year, no cell phones or social media allowed during the show.
That's very different than the last couple of
years. If you're backstage and you work for them and you have one job, making sure that the correct people are being announced as the winners, you can't have your phone.
If I can, really quick, before we hit this break, about snubs, I was shocked that Wonder Woman, which was one of the best critically reviewed movies of last year and one of the biggest box office hits, was shut out of every category. I would have thought production, design, costume, score, the score is fantastic, sound mixing, nothing.
How about visual effects?
And it got absolutely nothing.
You know, the visual effects awards nominees are Blade Runner 2049, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Kong Skull Island, Star Wars The Last Jedi, and War for the Planet of the Apes. How do you not include Wonder Woman, which, as you point out, was the biggest box office of all those?
On the flip side,
not the Star Wars movie, but
on the flip side, though, congrats to Rachel Morrison, who is the first woman nominated in the 90-year history of the Academy in the category for Best Cinematography. She shot Mudbound, and she is the very first woman ever nominated in that category. So, congrats to her.
That's great. It's also nice to see Greta Gerwig.
Absolutely.
Being nominated for director for
Lady Bird.
And Jordan
Peele for his first movie.
For Get Out.
Now,
which also, I think, got short shrift. But at least it got nominated for Best Picture and Best Director.
Now, what do you think
about...
And,
by the way, Best Actor for Daniel Kaluuya.
That's right. What do you think about James Franco not getting a Best Actor nod for Disaster Artist? Was this because of a Time's Up Me Too thing? Or is it more because they don't necessarily want to reward a movie that was mocking, you know, one of the worst films ever made?
As I recall, the ballots were due and handed in before the James Franco allegations came out and came to light. It was the same weekend as the Golden Globes when that started coming out. And he did get a Golden Globe because the ballots for that had already been in as well. So I think that the reason he got passed up on this is just because Hollywood didn't necessarily like the movie. And they also don't want to reward anything that has to do with The Room, the Tommy Wiseau movie. I know you love The Disaster Artist, but I could see how a lot of people in Hollywood would go, not so much.
I agree.
Did Ed Wood win anything?
You know, it won Best Makeup. And it also won supporting actor for
Martin Landau. Of course.
But that's it. It certainly did not win a host of awards.
One thing that we have to say about both Wonder Woman and The Big Sick, two movies that you and I have advocated for tremendously in the last several months, those are not the kind of movies that win Oscars. They might win box office, but they don't win Oscars. That's why the movies that are on here have actually, most of them, not been seen by a lot of people.
They should be, though, because a lot of them are very, very good.
But none of the ones that have been nominated for Best Picture is a $750 million movie.
Sure.
You do have some that gave great returns, like, you know, Get Out cost $5 million to make, and it made, what, $150 million domestic, something like that?
It's technically the biggest moneymaker of the year based on budget.
Yeah.
But it's not Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you never see those huge ones. The ones that you could argue are the box office favorites. But then again, the Oscars are not the People's Choice Awards. They are the choice of the actors and cinematographers and editors and hairdressers and makeup people and special effects people who are the members of the Academy.
Which, again, is why I'm surprised Wonder Woman is shut out in every category. The previous DC Comics film, Suicide Squad, which was critically reviled and audiences didn't go see it, it won an Oscar for Best Hair and Makeup. So how is Suicide Squad an Oscar-winning film and Wonder Woman is not even nominated?
Good point. We'll come back with more of the Showbiz Show in just a moment. We've got to talk about some TV shows that are being... Well, I was going to say rejuvenated, but that's not the right word. They're being reincarnated. One show that debuted 30 years ago is coming back again, and it's not Roseanne, because we already knew that was coming back in March to ABC. More Showbiz stuff after this on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Big 550 KTRS. KTRS, Max Foisy in the studio here. Talking about showbiz as we do every week at this time. Next hour, of course, the Harris Challenge and knuckleheads in the news. During the commercial break, I thought to myself, one last thought about the Oscars, which we talked about in the previous segment, the Oscar nominations at least. If I were producing the Oscar telecast, and by the way, there's a very funny promo that ABC started running this week, and you can find it on YouTube with Jimmy Kimmel and Warren Beatty. Jimmy Kimmel's having flashbacks to last year with the wrong Best Picture envelope and name being announced by Warren Beatty. It's very, very clever. I won't give it away. But if I were producing this year's, when the show is beginning and they announce, and now here's your host, Jimmy Kimmel, have Christopher Plummer walk out and just not even acknowledge the fact that he's filling in for somebody. Apparently, the producers decided at the last minute that Jimmy should not do this show, and so I'm happy to be here and have him actually do like a couple of jokes for the monologue, and then have Kimmel come out and say, "No, well, you know, that would be a clever start." We'll see if they follow up on that. While we're talking about movies, got to talk about a new movie theater that is going to be moving into the St. Louis area. It is a movie theater chain that I have talked about before because of something that happened at their Austin, Texas location a few years ago. The movie company is the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema that was started in San Antonio, Texas, near the Alamo, and branched out to other places around Texas, and now actually has branched out around the country and is coming here in St. Louis. They are very strict and always have been about the no texting policy during their movies, which led to this piece of audio, which went viral a few years ago because they were using it on screen. The screen actually said, here's a message. We have a no texting policy here. If you're texting and on your phone during the movie, we will throw you out. This woman apparently didn't believe us, and then they played this audio in the trailer.
Yeah, I was wondering if you guys actually enjoy treating your customers like a piece of because that's how I felt when I went to the Alamo Draft House. Okay, you know what? I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to text in your little crappy theater. It was too dark in that place for me to find my seat, all right? I was using my phone as a flashlight to get to my seat. So excuse me for using my phone in USA, United States of America, where you are free to text in a theater. I was not aware that I couldn't text in your theater, all right? I've texted in all the other theaters in Austin, and no one ever gave a about what I was doing on my phone, all right? And it was on silent. It wasn't on loud. It wasn't bothering anybody. You guys obviously were being me, and I'm sure that's what you do, you know, to rip people off. You take my money, and then you throw me out. You know, I will never be coming back to your Alamo Draft House or whatever. I'd rather go to a regular theater where people are actually polite. And, you know, I'm going to tell everyone about how you are. And I'm pretty sure you guys are being on purpose. So thanks for making me feel like a customer. Thanks for taking my money.
That's the message that they played, and that became the standard thing. People actually went to the Alamo Draft House to see that on the screen, regardless of what the movie was. And what's hysterical to me about that is, she tries to use the flashlight thing as a deflection. Hey, I was just using my phone as a flashlight, but then admits repeatedly that she was texting. Mm-hmm. I'm glad. I hope that they'll play that here when they open up a new 10-theater Alamo Draft House Cinema down near IKEA in the City Foundry development.
That area is just exploding. I mean, obviously, IKEA was fantastic. There's a couple other great developments down there.
There's the whole Cortex area. A lot of tech startups and others. Like, yeah.
And I think the Alamo Draft House is a wonderful chain. It does have a reputation for being, you know, it's very young, it's very hip, it's sort of a millennial theater chain, but they're very strict about texting. And also, my favorite thing about the Alamo Drafthouse is not the amount of food or beer that they have, which a lot of other theater chains have these days. It's all the special screenings they do. And at all of their locations nationwide, they will have special screenings with filmmakers and cast in person. So I'm looking forward to, this Saturday, The French Connection is going to be showing and William Friedkin is in town, because that's the kind of stuff this chain does.
Nice. Okay. Do we know what a start date is for that?
I believe next spring, so about a year away.
Okay. Well, welcome to town, although I'm sure that the people at Marcus/Werenberg are not happy about that, or the people at AMC or Landmark, although Landmark still has its own niche.
And anything that gets people to go out and see movies, I think, is a wonderful thing. We have the Moolah, we have MX, we have Marcus, we have AMC, and I don't think that competition has hurt it at all.
Have you noticed how Marcus is squeezing out the Werenberg name? If you pay to go to a movie in St. Louis now, before the movie, you see a message from the CEO of Marcus Theaters. Mm-hmm. You do not get to hear the old Werenberg. You don't get to hear that anymore.
I did hear some people behind me at a recent screening. I think it was, what was it? Anyway, it's 12 Strong maybe, going, Marcus.
I wonder how many St. Louisans will still call these theaters Werenberg theaters, because they are actually listed that way. If you go to IMDb, Showtime, Flixster, or other places, they're still in there. And remember, this is a town that refuses to say I-64. Well, we all still call it Highway 40.
Or Riverport.
Right.
Who's playing at Riverport?
Yeah. You're absolutely right. All right, TV notes today. CBS is going to bring back a sitcom from 30 years ago. Well, they figured if ABC can bring back Roseanne, we can go back a little bit further to 1988 and bring back Murphy Brown.
When I first heard this, I thought it was going to be a reboot, some sort of new, like a Hawaii 5-0. I didn't realize, much like Will and Grace or much like the proposed Mad About You follow-up, this is strictly a follow-up. You're going to have Candace Bergen back as Murphy Brown. Now, she, of course, famously had a baby that she was raising on that show.
Yes.
Does this mean that they're going to cast a 25-year-old to play that part?
I would bet that they do. I bet that that will be part of the dynamic of this. And Diane English, who was the woman who ran that original series for the first 4 or 5 years and then left, because the show stayed on the air 10 years, mm-hmm. but she was only the showrunner for 4 or 5. She is the one who is coming back. The creator of this will do that. I'll tell you who should be happy about this. Every other actor for Murphy Brown.
Yeah, Faith Ford.
Faith Ford, Charles Kimbrough, Joe Realbuto, Grant Shoud, and Eldon, played by Robert Pastorelli.
Well, I can't be happy.
I don't know if they're still around.
Well, I was going to say Eldon is not going to be happy because Robert Pastorelli died of a morphine overdose about 2002 or so.
So you say it's unlikely he'll be in the reboot?
I don't think we'll have the painter back. I don't know why she had her house painted or her apartment
for 10 years. Yeah,
it was a little strange. I don't know if you remember his whole story. He had a live-in girlfriend. She was shot. He was implicated, and then he overdoses.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. There's a. I'm sure there's an E! True Hollywood story about that.
I don't remember anything about any of that.
Yeah.
Wow. Murphy Brown is coming back, and so now we're in Reboot City. And guess what? ABC is thinking about bringing back. Well, I'll give you a hint. The theme song was sung by Joey Scarberry. The Greatest American Hero.
Okay, that's a great song.
Which originally starred William Catt.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to reboot it with a female lead.
Was it Robert Culp who was his?
Yes.
Okay,
exactly right.
Yeah.
They're going to reboot it with a female lead, and don't know what the start date's going to be for that. What else do I have on my showbiz list here today? Oh, speaking of TV, Jimmy Kimmel has a good guest booked for Tuesday night. Stormy Daniels. The porn star who allegedly had the affair with President Donald Trump long before he was the president, 12 years ago in 2006.
I'm a little surprised they're doing that on just a Tuesday night. You would think they would do that post-Super Bowl.
Wait a second. Tuesday, Trump gives the State of the Union address.
Oh, okay.
That'll get a big number.
I get it.
And there'll be big lead-ins there. Colbert is doing his show live that night.
Wow.
To take advantage of that. So that is a big thing. What else do we have to mention here? Oh, speaking of television, one other thing. Glad to see Phil Kogan. Phil Kogan is the host of The Amazing Race. He's been signed to be the new host of National Geographic Explorer. But when I heard that, I thought, oh, no. Does that mean that CBS is not going to have any more seasons of The Amazing Race? Because there's one running right now, but it's only running for about 8 weeks in that Wednesday night slot that's usually held by Survivor in the spring and the fall. And it'll end in February in time for the new season of Survivor. And then there are no plans right now for any more Amazing Race. However, Phil Kogan, in an interview this week with my friend Andy Daynard from Reality Blurred, says, oh, no, I think we're going to come back. We're in season 30 right now, and I think we're going to do 31 and 32 because we are our highest ratings in 5 years.
Wow.
In fact, last week's episode of The Amazing Race was the highest rated broadcast TV show of the night and fourth among viewers 18 to 49. That means if they leave it in that slot and don't mess around with it by putting it in the graveyard slot of Friday nights, mm-hmm. The Amazing Race, a show that my wife and I have watched every episode of, could come back for more.
Would you go on that show?
My wife and I play as if we're on the show every time we watch okay. it. When there's a roadblock or a detour, we determine, okay, who's going to do this? Which detour should we take? We actually are on the show in our own minds time we watch it. Nice. To answer your question, yeah, I would definitely go on that
show. Yeah, you would?
Absolutely.
I was thinking you were going to say no.
It's the only reality show I would ever consider going on. I'm not going to go into the Big Brother house. I'm not going to go do Naked and Afraid. Not that they're going to ask middle-aged, fat, bald guys to go on there. But I'm not going to go on Survivor because I couldn't survive.
Right. Yeah. No, I'd be horrible to all those games. I've only ever thought about doing like a Jeopardy or, you know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, something like that. But, you know, trivia based, I don't think I could do an Amazing Race or any of that stuff. I would be arguing with everyone.
Well, we travel a lot and we're pretty good after 34 years as a couple. We would not be one of those couples who goes on the race to see if it can fix our relationship.
Right.
Which always is a disaster. Tony Kushner and Steven Spielberg are working on a remake of one of the most beloved musicals of all time, West Side Story, which, of course, was a winner for Best Picture in 1961, in an era when musicals from Broadway were made into big-time movies.
You have to have giant cojones to remake a Best Picture winner.
Yes.
Now, has Spielberg ever done a musical? I'm going to say no.
I don't think he has.
Wow, interesting.
They have already put out the casting call. A couple of different things about this version than the original movie version and many stage versions. First of all, in the movie that they made in 1961, all the stars were in their late 20s or early 30s, and they were playing people in their late teens and early 20s. This time, the casting call is for people between 15 and 25.
Wow.
They're also going to cast Latino and Latina characters. In the 1961 movie, Natalie Wood does a terrible Puerto Rican accent as Maria. In fact, the only person who is a Latina in that cast of stars is Rita Moreno,
right.
who, believe it or not, they put in brownface. Did you know that?
I did not.
They used makeup to make her look darker.
Oh, that's horrible.
In that movie.
Well, Spielberg is a wonderful director of youth, so I think that there's a great match right there.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how far they can go and what they can do with it, but I wonder whether it's worth remaking that, particularly because this is still one of those shows that comes around to the Muni about every 3 years and plays in musicals, you know, not just outdoor places like the Muni, but other places. In fact, there was a revival of it on Broadway a few years ago and then came to the Fox here.
If you're going to do it, though, you could do worse than Steven Spielberg.
Well, I don't know. He's not done a musical before.
True.
Will he have the touch for that? And how much will Tony Kushner update it? And when they did the reboot on Broadway, the one that came to the Fox, they also changed a lot of the dialogue so that the Latino and Latina characters are actually speaking in Spanish.
Sure.
Which they were not, except for saying chica in the original. I will say this about West Side Story. It is undoubtedly the greatest score ever written for a Broadway musical turned into a movie musical.
High praise.
Leonard Bernstein. Bernstein, I'm sorry. It is so good that the St. Louis Symphony does a night of the music from the dances from West Side Story. If they don't do it every season, they do it every other season.
Do we know, is he going to repurpose those songs? Is it going to be the same exact score, or will they try to update that as well? Will he work with Lin-Manuel Miranda of Hamilton to try to update something?
That's a good question. I don't know. But how can you not use America and Tonight and some of the other classics from that movie? And lastly, I want to mention that... now, you know what? I'll hold on to it because I want to do it next hour.
Ooh, a tease.
In addition to the Harris Challenge and Knuckleheads in the News, I've got to talk about Stephen Colbert embracing Gwyneth Paltrow and her nonsense from Goop on his show last night. I was infuriated by this, but I don't have time to share my rage right now because we got to take a break. So I promise I'll get to it in the next hour of the Paul Harris Show here on the Big 550 KTRS.